Today, we've got a special episode of Talking Points with someone who is way more traveled than I am. He holds a lot of different titles, including having visited every country in the world, every baseball stadium in the U.S., both poles, and probably a lot more than I'm missing. Please welcome Lee Abamonte. Lee,
and the crowd goes wild.
What other feats did I miss of yours?
I just finished visiting every national park in America, too, so, yeah. Yeah.
I think I've only visited like two. I'm so bad. I've never even seen the Grand Canyon. I've been like all these random places in the world, like Liberia, but never the Grand Canyon. The
Grand Canyon's pretty awesome, man. You should check it out.
And Zion looks pretty cool, too.
Yeah, Zion is definitely in the top 10. I mean, it's one of those things that you don't really go to national parks unless you really make an effort to, except if the Grand Canyon's one that people see. But other than that, you have to make some effort and you kind of go to remote
Have you ever done
places.
Like a cross-country road trip?
Several.
I want to do that. I want to get in an RV or something and just like a bunch of friends and just like go through like the Badlands and just really see America.
Badlands are killer. And I always tell people the most beautiful part of the world is the southwestern United States, like around Four Corners, Utah, you know, Colorado, Nevada over there. It's just spectacular.
Amazing. All right. So let's introduce you to our listeners who don't know your story. So we have somewhat similar storylines. Just want to tell the brief story of how you became this full-time traveler.
Sure. I never traveled as a kid. I did a study abroad when I was 20 years old, basically on a whim because one of my buddies was going there. And essentially, I called my father up and I was like, "Dad, what do you think of me going to London for a year?" And he goes, "Why do you want to do that?" And I was like, "F you, I'm going, man."
Where'd you do undergrad?
Maryland, University of Maryland. And, you know, I went to Maryland because I thought I used to want to get into politics and play baseball. And I was near D.C., big-time sports school. And then study abroad changed everything for me. And that really just opened my eyes and my mind up to different things. I traveled something like 15 countries in Europe that year. I never thought I was going to go to every country in the world. I was just going around having fun. You know, we were doing the hostel thing, just, you know, drinking in different towns. We were 20, so it was great. You know, we didn't have to have fake IDs.
That's a good year to go on study abroad.
Yeah.
My story is similar because I, you know, growing up, not from a wealthy family. We did the Caribbean a couple times, but that was it. And I remember my friends would always go to London and, you know, I'm one of four kids and my parents were like, "We're not going to Europe." Like they just weren't international travelers. And then I studied abroad in Madrid in college and caught the bug and did the hostels, you know, staying in a hostel in Mallorca and just traveling all around. And that's really where that seed was planted as well.
Yeah, it's easy to get hooked, man, once you get started. And, you know, like you, I never had the opportunity to travel as a kid. Like my family had no money. And we went to the Jersey Shore a couple times to Stone Harbor, New Jersey. And that was like my favorite place in the world because it was the only place I'd been.
Which is pretty beautiful. Yeah,
it was really nice.
Yeah. After college, you get a job in finance?
Yeah, I got a job at a company called Cantor Fitzgerald, which was in One World Trade Center, the original One World Trade Center. And, you know, after after 9/11, I lost a lot of friends and colleagues, obviously. I lost
one of my... You started at Cantor?
In 2000.
Wow. And were you working in One World Trade?
Yeah, on the 102nd floor, yeah. And, you know, on that day, I happened to be in Texas, and... And, you know, it was the worst of times, as you can imagine. And but it just kind of changed my mindset that instead of just trying to make a lot of money and do the rat race thing here in New York, like most people were doing, especially at the time, I just decided to kind of live my life. And I actually quit my job in 2002 and then essentially went traveling for 2 years. But the first year I went to three countries. I went to like Australia, New Zealand, and Fiji. And that was the greatest thing I ever did.
Did you go with like a one-way ticket? And
one-way ticket.
And what was your inspiration having, like, did you have other friends who were backpackers? Or was it emotional sort of...
You know, it's funny. One of my best friends, Jake, he had a job in Wall Street as well, and he hated his job. So I convinced him to quit his job, and we flew to Sydney, and we just slow tripped around Australia. And I tell you, that was the greatest thing I ever did because it was just I needed the mental break. Mm-hmm. And
had you banked a good amount of money?
Yeah, I'd sold a business when I was younger. So even before I started a business in college, and I sold that when I was 21.
What kind of business?
An internet company, and I sold it.
Sounds a little bit like porn.
No, it was not porn. Although that would have been a lucrative business, right? It's only two things that make money on the internet, right? Gambling and porn. But
and credit cards.
And credit cards. But yeah, it was just one of those things, man. And we went down and just had a great time. And, you know, at the time also the US dollar was pretty strong. The Aussie dollar was about half what it was. So it really wasn't even that expensive. And plus, you know, I'd worked on Wall Street for 2 years, so I'd saved some money as well. And
Did everyone in your life think you were crazy, or did people cheer you on?
Oh, yeah. They thought I was insane, but not as insane as the second time I quit my job after I came back, and then I worked for 4 or 5 years, and I was absolutely crushing it. And, you know, come 2008, I was just tired of it. I was just burnt out. And I had, in 2006, I'd started my website, leahbamonte.com, and I decided that I was basically going to try to go to every country in the world, because I'd already been to about 120 or something at the time without really trying. And then you kind of got to put some effort in to go to like Somalia and like Sudan and places like that. So I'd gotten an email about this record to be the youngest guy to ever do it. And I was just like, wow, I was like 27 at the time. I was like, wow, I can do this. And I got some money in the bank. I might as well give it a run. But I was not really in a rush. And I always say, if I had known it was going to be a thing, I would have done it a lot sooner.
But did you know the age of the record guy? Like, did you have a certain time? Like, I got to do this in 4 years and 2 months? Or
yeah, but it was 11 years at the time. He was like 38 and change when he had done it. And I was like 27 at the time.
Got it. So, you know, it's 08, the financial crisis hits. You're like, peace out, New York.
You know,
did you put together, okay, I've got to hit, what, like 71 countries, here's a ranking of, or did you start doing a whole route, or?
The funny thing was, I quit my job in August 2008, and I looked like a genius because a week later, like, everything just totally collapsed.
Yeah.
And I was working at Merrill Lynch at the time, and then that kind of ceased to exist, at least in its.
Oh, so you quit right before the whole.
Yeah, it wasn't because I was super smart or anything. It was just kind of luck.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and then I went enrolled in business school. I got an MBA, but I did that to have free time to finish going to all the countries.
You went to Thunderbird, right?
Correct, yeah, in Arizona.
Which is super international in itself, right?
It was the number one international business school in the world. So in my thought, I was going to do something positive so I didn't have like a two-year gap on my resume where I was just, you know, screwing off basically. And, you know, who knew it would turn into what it turned into.
So did you start, when you went to Thunderbird, did you start checking off countries?
Yeah.
So you knew at that point, let me start just banging these out, like...
Yeah, because Thunderbird was on trimesters.
Well, business school is basically like adult study abroad. I mean, you know, like travel. Business school students travel more than I do.
It was a bit of a joke school-wise. I mean, and I won't say I learned much, but I made some great friends and had a good time, and I had 3 or 4 months a year to travel.
Yeah. So then, you know, you do 2 years of business school. How many countries did you knock off there?
Just about all of them.
Oh, and, so that was when you did most of
it. Yeah, I did a lot because I had like 4 month breaks. Yep. So just literally that's where I did all of West Africa and Central Africa.
And you self-funded?
Everything. Paid for everything.
So let's
spend a lot of money.
You know, I want to try to avoid the worst place, the best place. I hate when people ask me those questions, but I do know, you know, especially traveling around Africa and some of the more, you know, they're lawless nations, right? What were precautions you would take before each trip? You didn't have security guards, right? So
The only place I ever had a security guard for was in Afghanistan, and that's because I went during the war. And there's a couple of places I probably should have done it, but chose not to. But my kind of precautions were in the research, and I would just research when I was going to, you know, the quote-unquote bad places that had potential danger. I didn't know anything about them, and there's not a lot of stuff out there. So, you know, I would check the State Department website, but as most people listening to this probably know, they say, like, Mexico is dangerous, like, don't go there. So, but you take certain things into consideration, and I actually registered with some of the embassies in the places I went to.
Yeah, we recommend that, the STEP program, right? It's pretty easy online now to just tell people. Because even in, like, popular countries, you know, if there's a tsunami or something, you know, you want to definitely be registered.
Yeah, it was very easy to do, and I actually was against it. But one of my friends who I traveled with, she insisted on doing it, and then I started doing it after that.
Yeah. And did the embassies ever, you know, help you? Did you ever actually go to an embassy while you were abroad for help?
I went to one embassy when I was abroad. Ironically, it was in Monrovia, Liberia. Because I ran out of money.
No ATMs in
Correct.
Monrovia.
Correct. There's no ATMs.
They don't work.
In the goddamn country.
It's crazy.
And so I didn't have any cash on me. Of course, I had money in the bank, but I couldn't access it. So what ended up happening was, at the time, this was like 11 years ago, and in 2007 or 2008, whenever I was there, the only place in the country that took credit card was the Brussels Airlines office. So what we ended up doing was going to Brussels Airline, buying a ticket to, I think it was to Abidjan, because they flew from Liberia to Abidjan, Ivory Coast. And we just asked them to charge us like $1,000 more than it costs and just give us the money in cash. And they agreed to do it for a 10% fee.
Oh, wow.
So that was my ATM.
You'll pay whatever. Yeah.
I just wanted to get out of there.
The one that I found this past week was $7, and the max you could take out was a 3.5% fee, which my bank refunds anyway. But it was like when I found that one ATM that actually worked, it was like – but actually they have a casino there. We went two nights to this random casino in Monrovia, and we actually had a really good time.
I think that's the hotel I stayed in because they actually had
the
a casino.
Palm Spring.
Something like that. One other thing about the embassy, when we went there – to ask them if we could use the ATM. So they took us in, and there was an ATM literally behind the desk, and they wouldn't let us use it. I was like, wait a minute, I'm an American citizen. And so the only time I've ever actually tried to use an embassy, they wouldn't help me. And they said, because I'm not like an official government like employee or whatever. I was like, are you kidding me?
That's absurd. And so how do you define countries, right? There's a lot of different ways people slice and dice and argue about it. Can you talk a little bit about the different ways that people define republics and countries, and what does it count? Does a layover count? What was your personal standard for officially checking off that you visited?
Sure. First of all, there's 193 countries in the world, meaning 193 sovereign nations, UN member states. Sometimes you'll hear stuff like 195 or 196 or 197. That's people counting places like Kosovo and Taiwan and places like that are internationally recognized by most countries but not UN members. So there's officially 193 countries. Then there's something called the Traveler Century Club list, which I believe has 325 destinations. That includes places like Puerto Rico or Guam or French Guyana. It counts separately than going to France. So it's a more comprehensive list of travel.
Where are you with 325?
321.
Oh, wow. So what do you got left on that list?
The lovely islands of Tristan da Cunha, which is one of the most remote places in the
world.
Sounds
like the hottest new Hollywood star. Tristan da Cunha.
It's in the South Atlantic. It's basically midway between South America, Africa, and Antarctica. And it's literally supposed to be the most remote populated place in the world. 200 people live there.
Would you have to get on a tanker or something?
There's a cargo ship, supply ship that goes once or twice a year from Cape Town. It's 6 days each way, which sounds awful to me. And then there's a repositioning boat that goes once a year from Ushuaia to Tristan da Cunha, St. Helena,
there's
and
no
Ascension.
Airport.
There's no airport, no. And there's not a ton to do there from what I hear. So if I'm going to go there, it's going to be the last one if I'm going to subject myself to that boat trip. And the other two are Diego Garcia, which is the British Indian Ocean Territory, and Wake Island, both of which are government-controlled, so it's really difficult to get permission to go there. I've actually had five trips to Wake Island canceled. So I've been to Guam 6 times, once to go to Guam, and then 5 other times to go to Wake Island, and all 5 times they were canceled. And the last one is the Yemeni island of Socotra.
Oh, yeah, I've heard about that.
Yeah, it's supposed to be really nice.
The lethal bugs or something like that?
They have the crazy trees. I'm not sure what they're called.
Yeah, poisonous trees or something.
Yeah.
So sad what's going on in Yemen right now.
It's the worst humanitarian crisis that no one knows anything about in the world, and it needs to be stopped. It's embarrassing.
So absurd, yeah. We learn about the Rwandan genocide, and let's never let that happen again, and all these horrible genocides, and then there's Syria and Yemen, and it's.
Well, I mean, what Saudi Arabia is doing there is oppressive, and I mean, I was just in Saudi Arabia, and when Khashoggi was murdered, and
do you ever worry? Yeah, we came out with the same. So what Saudi Arabia is doing is disgusting.
Disgusting.
We came out. I mean, do you ever worry about speaking your mind? I mean, in those countries, like I'm not going to Saudi Arabia. I don't care. I'm just. It will take a lot for me to go there, but I wonder. The UAE is so closely aligned with them. And speaking your mind, have you ever been denied entry into a country?
I've been denied visas a few times, but not for speaking my mind. But when I was actually in Saudi just a couple weeks ago, I'm in the country when the murder happens and it comes out. And, I was sharing on social media and stuff like that. And then when it happened, I quickly put my VPN on so it looked like I was in Europe.
Because they track everything.
Correct.
And they go through your text messages.
Exactly.
And
so I wasn't responding to any texts or emails that I was getting. I got emails from, U.S. national cable news channels, like asking for comment and stuff like that. What's it like being in Saudi during this crisis? And I refused to answer.
It's like, of course they don't have the news, or they have the news. Oh, is that Saudi's being poorly blamed for this? I love that response.
Oh, God. That whole thing was just an embarrassment.
Okay, and then back to, so how do you classify? So is a, do you have to spend a night in each place, or were, did some countries you visit for the day? Like, how'd that work?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that a visit counts when you think it counts. So, like, some places are good for a day. They really are. Yeah. Like, I always kind of jokingly say, if you've been to Chad, like, one day is good there.
Yeah. But Zach on the Points Guide team just went to Chad, and yeah. I think he was 2 days there, and I think he was ready to come home.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It's not a very nice place. Yeah. But, I mean, at the same time, places like India or Brazil, like, you know, a month is not enough time,
right,
because it's such a big country. That's like, there's so many places to see and so many things to do. So I always say, whenever you're satisfied with a visit, it counts, so to speak. But at the same time, I always use shorter visits as an impetus to go back, because you got a taste, and then, you mm-hmm. know, you could see if you wanted to go back to that part of the country. And then I would always use it to go to somewhere else the second time I visited.
Having visited every official country, are there any themes that were recurring no matter where you went, or lessons learned through, you know?
I would say that the thing that I learned the most is that people around the world are basically good and the same. And I always say this, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, just because the government of a country gets tarnished on the cable news or like whatever, it doesn't necessarily mean that the people of that country are like that. So when you actually talk to the real people, that's when you get the real feel for the country. I always use an example of Libya, which I went there during the war, and I actually got shot at the border, which is a another story for another day. But once I finally got in there, I've never been treated better,
right,
and more kindly than the people of Libya, and I'll never forget that. And this was during Gaddafi was still alive. He was on the run, and this was during the war when there was totally lawless, and I've never been treated better in my life, and I'll never forget it.
I totally agree with you that meeting actual people, that's what breaks down barriers, right? So if you know, and I respect people who will boycott swaths of countries or whatever, but are there any countries that you won't go back to at all?
Well, it's funny you say that. I always kind of looked at myself as an ambassador for the American traveler, because I'm sure you know that Americans don't necessarily have the best international reputation, especially that they don't travel. They don't leave the country. So when people would meet me and they would find out I'm American, then they would talk to me and they would find out that, you know, I'm educated and I know what I'm talking about and I've been around. And but not only that, but I know things about the places I'm in, because a lot of people just go places and they don't do any research. They don't know anything. So I always took it upon myself to kind of represent the American traveler when I traveled. And in terms of going back to places or not, I probably won't go back to Saudi Arabia. And I was actually doing a consulting project there, and I'm no longer doing that. And
yeah, Richard Branson just backed out of his thing too, right?
Yeah, he did.
Like,
yeah.
And
I applaud that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't want to pretend like I'm on a moral high horse, because there's a lot of places that, you know, mess with human rights. I mean, I've been to North Korea.
Our country's done some pretty wicked things.
Right. And our country's not exactly yeah. perfect. And, you know, I go to China a couple times a year yeah. and, you know, other countries.
Where do you start drawing the
line? Right. Where
then?
Do you draw the line? So I always just look at it as, like I said, a personal representative of myself and my country. And there's no place that I wouldn't go back to, except probably there. Well, I'm not going to say what I had my worst experience in, because then people are going to go crazy on me. But I want to go back there specifically to have a better time, because I know it was possible. I just had a bad experience.
What continent? You got to give us a hint.
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, it's pretty public out there. It was Nigeria. The police came up to me and my friend three different times on the streets and basically demanded money, or they would throw us in jail. And, you know, you're in their country. They're the cops. They have guns. And they could say whatever they want, essentially. So you kind of have to acquiesce to them. And then I'll say this about that trip as well. Three times I went to the ATM. How many times have you been to the ATM in your life? Like thousands, right?
Yeah.
How many times have you gotten the wrong amount of money? Like, never.
Never.
Okay, three times in two days, I went to the ATM and got the wrong amount of money. And it wasn't like I asked for $100 and got 99. It was like I asked for 100 and got, like, six. So, you know, three times that happened.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, there's a camera right above you. And yeah. I go into the branch or whatever, and I was like, oh, excuse me, sir. You know, I got the wrong amount of money. You can check on the camera. And then, of course, they're like, oh, the camera doesn't work. And I'm like, really, man? You know?
So did your bank in the U.S.?
I don't even remember what I ended up doing. I like filed something, but it wasn't even enough
so,
money.
So Nigerians hate when you say that and they say you're misrepresenting the country, but you're like, this is my experience.
That's what happened to me.
I tell the truth. Yeah.
You know, and I have some friends from Nigeria. I mean, I went to business school with Nigerians and they were wonderful, but that was my experience.
Yeah. Interesting. So I do know you've had some amazing travels. You do these trips to the South and North Pole. There have been some pretty notable people on them. Just want to tell us a little bit about how you got involved in doing these crazy trips.
Sure. Well, earlier before we got on the air, you were asking me about meaningful trips. And I'll tell you the cause and the effect of the most meaningful trip I ever had. The first time I went to tried to go to the South Pole, that was the trip you're referring to. I had Prince Harry on the trip and a bunch of other actors.
An old Russian plane or something?
A Ilyushin 76 was what we flew down from Cape Town to Novolazarevskaya, a Russian base with a blue ice runway. Now, this is the most unbelievable plane I've ever flown on in my life, but what ended up
happening... It was a military plane?
Cargo plane, yeah. There's literally porta-potties in the back of the plane.
Wow.
And
no lie flat beds? I guess the floor?
No lie flat beds, and even the Prince of England had to use the porta-potty on the plane. And we ended up not making it, to make a long story short, and because there was some favoritism by the Russians who control the logistics in Antarctica there, and to the prince and his friends who he was down there filming something with. And I get it. But we ended up not making it. And it was pretty devastating considering the cost of the trip.
Boy, favoritism. So what, he let the prince go but not you?
Yeah, because there was two groups of people, even though we were all together. And one of the planes actually crashed that takes people from Nova Base to the pole.
Like died? People died?
No, nobody died, but it was not good and the plane was inoperable. And it's these old World War II Basslers. And, you know, and you've never seen anything like it, but there was only one and they can only take up to about 12 people in them. So Harry's group got kind of priority over us and it wasn't anything to do with him personally. Yeah. You know, it's just the way it worked out. And I get it. But at the same time, my group, we all paid a lot of money to go there. And so that was kind of my impetus to starting, you know, doing the trips was because I wanted to sort of recoup some money and I wanted to go back. And that's basically what I ended up doing the next year. And we ended up making it. And when I made it there,
and it's like 50 grand to go on one of these trips.
It's more than that. Yeah. Almost double that actually.
Oh, wow. Are you going on any?
No, I still work, you know, with them and help people get to the poles, but I'm not going anytime soon. If I do, it would be after climbing Mount Vinson, the tallest peak in Antarctica, because there's actually a trip where you can combine climbing Mount Vinson and going back to the pole. I wouldn't mind going back, but I'm not going to go specifically just to go.
So for someone, you know, some young listener or old listener, we're not ageist here, is thinking about, hey, that sounds cool to visit every country. What are tips to someone who was going to set out and do it? What would you tell them?
Number one, save your money because it's not cheap. And anyone who says it's cheap is full of shit.
Mm-hmm. And how much money did you carry on you at any given time?
I always had cash on me. That's why it was such a problem in Liberia because I actually went on that trip. I had a couple thousand dollars cash because I didn't know, especially at that time, the ATMs were not prevalent like they are. So I would say cash is king and always have cash on you and in different currencies and in U.S. have different denominations, especially ones and fives, in addition to 20s. And if you have hundreds past 2006, $100 bills, otherwise most countries won't accept them. So have money and then have access to more money at home because things always cost more than you think they're going to cost. I don't care where you're going. I don't care your budget. It's always going to go over. So have that. And then I mentioned before, do research. I would say research, 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 because you want to have an idea of what you're getting into and what there is to do. But then at the same time, you want to leave time when you're on the ground for things that you hear about or you didn't see on, you know, TripAdvisor or Lonely Planet or something like that.
Do you trust TripAdvisor?
No, I don't.
So what do? You sift through blogs like of destinations you're going or are there any guidebooks you like or is there anything really that's up to date across the globe?
I used to swear by Lonely Planet books when I was younger, but now I really don't. They're still good for certain things like restaurants. But TripAdvisor is good for restaurants too, or some of the others. But what I, when I say I don't trust it, it's not that I don't trust it. I don't trust the people who review it because they don't necessarily have names. You don't know their tastes and they're different than yours. So like what I think might be a crap hotel or something like that, somebody else might think is wonderful. You know what I mean? And so I wish there was a system of knowing who the people were. So basically what I do is I ask people who I trust. People who have similar interests and tastes as me and who have been there.
And so you use like social media?
Social media. And at this point, I know a lot of people in the industry, obviously, you know, and people who have been to places more recently than I have. So then I'll just literally ask them or, you know, you do some research. And then, like I said, when you get on the ground, if you ask, like, say, a hotel concierge and what restaurant to go to, or if you ask if this restaurant you saw on TripAdvisor or one of the others is good and they agreed, then maybe you'll go there. So use it as a base, but I don't use it as a rule.
Two final quickies. One, are you a window or aisle seat person?
If I want to sleep, it's window. If I'm just taking like a day trip, then it's aisle.
And lastly, what are your thoughts on space travel? Are you going to be on a Virgin Galactic flight, or do you like it here on Terra Firma?
Well, I definitely like Terra Firma, although admittedly, if and when it does come to fruition, I'd be hard-pressed to not do it. I'm sure you probably feel the same way.
Yep.
Yeah, I can't imagine myself not doing it once it becomes an option.
Lee, you're the best. Thanks for joining us. And where can people follow you if they want to learn more? And I highly recommend following Lee.
Thanks, man. Social media, at Lee Abbamonte, LeeAbbamonte. And my website is LeeAbbamonte.com.
Cool. Thanks for coming, Lee, and safe travels.
Anytime, my man. Thanks.
Again, I'm your host, Brian Kelly, and this episode was produced by Caroline Chagrin and Jessica Robniak, with editing by Ryan Gabus. Our music's by Breakmaster Cylinder, and a special thanks to Adam Kotkin and Mike Bruno. If you like this episode and want to hear more, make sure you leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you downloaded this podcast. But more importantly, tell your friends. The more people we have listening, the more episodes we'll make. And if you tag me on Instagram at Brian Kelly or use the hashtag Talking Points on social media, I might even give you a shout out. See you next week. And until then, safe travels.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.